Hello friends, in this module, chapter number 13, we are going to be talking about delegation, decentralization and span of management. If you notice this small picture kept here, it's about somebody passing on the baton to someone else. It's about passing on the baton to someone else. In a relay match, you must have seen how a number of runners are running one after the other. One runner goes up to a point, then he passes on the baton, a small wooden stick, to the next in line, and he takes it and further runs and gives it to somebody else. And it goes on. The team is set to win when the passing on the baton is done effectively and the runner runs at a competitive speed. Right? Now that is symbolic about how we have to do delegation and how we have to run our companies efficiently. So let us go to the first slide. We talk about this particular thing called authority, which all of us know as a term. Authority is a power to make decisions which guide the action of others. When I give authority to someone, I'm giving him the power to make decisions. Authority is usually given in a legitimate background. When I say legitimate, I mean when you work in a formal organization, when something is formalized, then it becomes legitimate. For example, an authority is given to a person who works in an organization to take up a research. The same person is qualified, equipped, experienced enough to do research on his own as a freelancer. Now, when he is doing a research on his own as a freelancer, he has to authorize himself to do it by creating a legitimacy. If he is hired by the organization to do this research, then the legitimacy will be controlled by the contract which they have. This researcher will be a contractor or a vendor, as you call them, and then he will be limited to that authority only. There are a number of things that happen when the authority is not coming out of a position of legitimacy. The authority is much more effective when there is a legitimacy backing it. So I like to just suggest to people who are running their own companies, their own consulting firms, to create a formal structure. I know many people who run their organizations, individual organizations, very small, without a formal structure. When you do not have a formal structure, you tend to become indisciplined. And when you tend to become indisciplined, your conversations, your communication, your commitments, everything turn to become informal, at the same time lacking authority. When we say authority, we are not talking about somebody with an authoritative tone or somebody who talks with a lot of aggression. We are talking about somebody who knows what he or she is supposed to do and does it with discipline within a structure. So when I say that authority is a power to make decisions which guide the action of others, I mean that it is a decision, it is a power given to you because you're holding a position. So the word position is important to understand authority. If the position is not clear, you always find that the authority that the person is wielding is also not very clear and effective. Right? As per Henry Fayol, authority is a right to give orders and the power to exact obedience. I would not like to use the word obedience because obedience is a little too much of a controlling type of a thing. I say and you do. There are words like compliance, there are words like acceptance. Okay, now when I have an authority, I have the right to give orders and instructions and the power to get work done out of you. So probably the word obedience in this context is all about obeying the orders from the viewpoint of the positional power. Since I am your boss, since I am your senior, what I say you have to do, there's no other way because we are a part of a contract of employment in the company. The position demands it. So that's authority as per Henry Fayol. Other two people, Kunz and O'Donnell, they say that authority is the power to command others to act or not to act in a manner deemed by the possessor of the authority to further enterprises or departmental purposes. Long, very long definition, but this also explains the same thing in a different wording, right? So what are the basis of getting things done? Characteristics of authority we are just discussing now. So it's the basis of getting things done, the right to take actions towards completion. Okay, so one of the characteristics of authority is to get things done, right? We don't work like commandos, we don't work like islands, we work in teams. Some work is allocated to me and I have to get it done, and for that I need an authority to get the work done, right? So authority gives a right to do things in an organization and affect the behavior of other workers of the organization. It leads to the performance of certain activities for the accomplishment of the defined objectives automatically. By virtue of the position of power and the organizational chart that flows from top to bottom in terms of authority, one automatically gets these positions of authority to get things done, right? Next comes legitimacy, which is a positional authority which I spoke about. It's an authority that implies a legal right within the organization itself available to the superiors, right? Decision making, the freedom and the right to make choices of action. The most important attribute of giving authority to someone is it gives him or her the power of decision making. Decision making is the backbone of all management process, and decision making within resource constraint. Make a note. Decision making within resource constraint, decision making within control boundaries of your position is an art. And when the authority is given, you are given certain degrees of freedom, and certain degrees of freedom are not given to you. Decision making becomes quite dicey, quite challenging when the control boundaries are drawn because of your position, and you have to take a decision because the authority is given to you to take a decision. And when the decision is being taken by you, it could make or break you. So it's a dicey situation, and decision making is, it separates the men from the boys in terms of developing the art of decision making. Let me add, a person who has taken a decision in one particular instance, he succeeds. Succeeding in decision making means what? It means that the decision has clicked in terms of the goal achievement effectively. That doesn't mean that he is a good decision maker for all times to come, because boundaries keep changing, resource constraints keep happening again and again. The skill of decision making is a process, it's a way of thinking that has to be mastered. And people who take the risk of decision making, they go through the roller coaster of success and failures. In organizations, I have noticed decision making is bestowed upon people by virtue of the authority, and it is expected that they always take right decisions. They may or may not get rewarded for right decisions, but they are certainly punished when they take a wrong decision. Wrong decision meaning a decision which yields a result other than what is expected. Now, nothing can be more immature than this. A good organization is supposed to nurture managers and leaders who are willing to take decisions, who are allowed to take decisions, because behind every decision there is a risk. If there are no risk takers, then how will the organization develop future leaders? So the point to be noted is that decision making is having an element of risk, because the boundaries are closed. And hence, decision making is a very critical aspect of an authority. It's a prerequisite of an authority. The manager can command his subordinates to act or not to act, and this type of decision is taken by the manager regarding the functioning of an office. He has the authority, so he decides on something XYZ. And if it's an organization which is a typical top-down organization, then the subordinates merely follow it. If the culture of the organization does not support any cross talk, any suggestions from bottom to top, then these decisions could be disastrous in some occasions. Today we talk about participative decision making. Today we talk about laissez-faire managers, wherein there's a lot of give and take between top and bottom in terms of information, in terms of ideas, etc. But if decision making is centralized by one person just because he is holding an authority, it could create a lot of disasters. So gone are the days when somebody used to say that I am the boss, I take the decision, you better follow it. This way you don't allow people to grow and you don't allow people to nurture, and they are all controlled and constrained. As a matter of fact, every organization is a control body. We come there with a lot of control. We have to discipline ourselves in terms of communication, in terms of thoughts, in terms of ideas, and we have to be controlled in our communication. We should not talk wrong things. All those things are already there. Over and above this, if you're not allowed to take any decision, you feel extremely powerless, incompetent. Now, this is something that happens. This is one form of holding power on people. A very cheap thrill, if I could use the word. Okay. Now, decision making has to be going along at all levels. We must allow people to take decisions, allow them to take the risk, correct them, guide them, and make them standing on their own 2 feet so that they take over senior functions. Right? So, implementation. The next aspect characteristic of authority is it enables you to implement. Implementation influences the personality factors of the manager who is empowered to use authority. Very interesting. In my experience as a behavioral trainer, leadership trainer, I've noticed in many organizations, people rise to become a senior in terms of the organizational chart. From a first level entrant, fresh from the engineering college, the person goes maybe 8 or 10 years hence, he's at the level of a project manager or a project director in an IT company typically. But he has reached that position, but he does not have the personality of connecting to people, of making things happen, of implementing, etc. He is not even aware that this authority is there with him, and this authority needs to be put into action. Remember one thing, friends, when you're holding a position, with that comes a certain authority which you need to recognize. If you do not recognize that authority, you'll be doing a disfavor to the position A and also to the people around you, especially the people who are below you. If you're seen as a person who is afraid to implement things, afraid to take decisions, you'll have no respect. Your personality itself will not grow. I would go to the extent of saying that unless the personality of the person is groomed to take up higher positions, he should not be promoted. Just because a person has spent 8 or 10 years in an organization doesn't mean that he has to get promoted to a certain level. Many organizations do not see that the personality of the person is not developed. I would lay emphasis on that development first before he takes charge. It does a lot of disfavor to him in his personal life. It does a lot of disfavor to the department, to the function that he is taking care of, and last but not the least, to the organization itself. I mean, we'll all agree, I'm sure, that when we talk about leadership at the top level, they have to be very balanced people. People who enjoy doing what they're doing, not stressed. If people are getting stressed at the higher levels, it's because they are finding it very stressful. They don't have the software within them, the personality within them, the behavior within them to take decisions as well as implement. That's why this word personality is very interesting. It is very important aspect of this whole implementation thing. Few people recognize their own authority of their position. Very few people recognize. You must know exactly that this is my authority. And then there are people who do not even know what to do with the authority. They do not know when to be formal, when not to be formal. Now, all that is a part of the training, in fact, that needs to be done by the organization. In fact, when you go through induction orientation in an organization, these are things that have to be told to you, indicated to you, if not told directly, and you've got to catch it. At whatever position you are, you must learn what is my authority. There are other terms which I'll be discussing down the line, which also we need to recognize. Right? Next comes, now there are four terms. Characteristics of authority implies four terminologies which I've created. First is, it starts with power. Then from power flows authority. Authority validates your responsibility which you take up, and all the three of them put together, power, authority and responsibility, is ultimately that makes you accountable for what you do. These four terminologies are important for us to understand the position of a person in an organization. you, the executive who is holding a position, has got four attributes. These are the four attributes we are talking about, right? Now, here we talk about sources of authority, sources of authority. In this discussion, we are talking about how authority is flowing in organizations of different types. So the first one we talk about is a formal authority theory. The formal authority theory, the oldest theory, which is still being followed in many, many organizations. In simple terms, it says, I am your boss, so I have the authority over you. So it's about top-down approach. And according to this theory, the authority flows top to bottom, top down, through the structure of an organization. In other words, the authority flows from the general manager. There's a position, there's a name given. It need not be general manager as a designation. It can be anybody who's holding this position here. So from the general manager to his departmental managers, and in turn from the departmental managers to its superintendent and the like, these are all terms given. This is explained in the following diagram, which means the board of directors, they exercise their authority on the GM on the SM, SM on the sales representative, and finally to the workers. It's clear cut. I hold the authority. You better listen to me. You better take it from me. In turn, I as a junior will look up to my boss saying that he's my authority. Simple. Now this has its own pitfalls. Like we say, I cannot choose my boss when I join an organization. I cannot choose my peer, neither can I choose my subordinate. Now this being the case, we may have personality mismatches. We may have problems about communication not being proper. So I may not really like to work and take authority from a person. I may be unwilling. Now this being the case, this limitation of this particular model is that although it is supposed to work well, there's an assumption behind it which says that people will gladly take up authority. They don't. People do not gladly take up orders coming from top. Not everybody does it. It requires a tremendous amount of maturity and training and personality development as well. This is good as far as the structure is concerned as a starting point. So we proceed further. So when we proceed further, we talk about another one which is called the acceptance of authority theory. A little more human, a little more HR touch. The authority flows from the superior to the subordinates whenever there's an acceptance on the part of the subordinates. So here, the emphasis, the importance is given to the subordinates and his acceptance of the senior. Let's admit it. Superior, junior equations have to be harmonious to begin with for any delegation to happen. If the senior-junior relationship is not harmonious, then everything falls apart. This is something organizations do not recognize, unfortunately. The senior and the junior need to have a good rapport, a good informal relationship as well, with boundaries clearly understood. If this is not there, then there's a problem. When this is created, an informal relation between the senior and the subordinate, automatically this will happen. There'll be an acceptance of whatever the senior says. If the senior is too formal, he drives things down and he says you do it because you're being paid for it. Bad killer statements. You know, people say you're being paid for it, so do it. I don't care what you do. I want this work done. Now, these are statements which can be well avoided. If you really want work to be done, if you want to stay together and get things done as a team, if you don't want to create toxic energy. If the senior and the subordinate has a good rapport, give and take, a type of a participative relationship, then what will happen is the acceptance of authority prevails in that organization. The subordinates accept the authority, but there's no compulsion made by the superior. If the subordinates do not accept the command of their superior, then the superior cannot also be can be said to have any authority over them, which means there's a flexibility. The wording is a little different, but let me explain to you. The flexibility is given saying that, look, first and foremost, the crux of the whole way of working is that we shall ensure that we are accepted. And to see that we are accepted, we don't become overbearing, neither are we too lax. We ensure that we give all possible chances for the person to accept you. So the senior has to be skilled enough. He should have gone through a good amount of training to understand human nature so that when a subordinate is given to him, he must be able to create that acceptance of authority type of an atmosphere. Okay, now next. Then we talk about competence theory. Very powerful. It's a theory which is being followed in most organizations today. When I say competence means it's the highest form of skills. Starts with knowledge. Knowledge with repeated actions gives you skills. Skills take you to capabilities. And capabilities develop into competence. So when we talk about competence, the type of authority is invested with persons by virtue of their office held by them. I am doing some job and I'm doing it very well. I'm very efficient. I use optimum resources. I make the proper decisions. I am willing to implement and take the risk. Now, all these things coming together is a sign of a competence. So anyone who does this is rewarded, and competence is given a front seat in such organizations. So people are competent. People show these skills, these capabilities, these type of attributes are given an importance. The personal power of this type of persons is based on the leadership qualities of the person concerned. It's leadership as in the person is competent enough. He's skill based and he's also people based. When skills and people skills both come together, core skills and people skills, what happens? The person is in a position to influence, and he inspires people. He inspires people through his charisma. There's something good about him, right? In an organization, only one person gets a higher position than others in course of time based on leadership qualities possessed by him. Again, the terms are a little differently written here, but I'd like to just mention that in a competence theory type of an organization, the importance or the focus is given for people who are competent. Competency takes the front seat. Need not be the formal authority, need not be the acceptance alone, but at the end of the day, who is performing, who is growing, who is able to deliver the results. Again, a word of caution as a trainer. We find organizations with extremely competent people. I see them. But the competence cannot come at the cost of toxic energy of relationship within the organization. If I want to excel, fair enough. It's my ambition, my dream. If I want to be highly competent, fair enough. But in the bargain, am I creating certain dissonance around me? That's the question. It's like coming out with an excellent quality product, making people work and stress themselves. But in the bargain, those people have been given very poor HR practices. And there is no relationship which is really good. If this is happening without a meaningfulness, then the whole thing goes for a toss. So ensure that the competence aspect of it is rewarded, keeping intact the harmonious, the friendly energy, the team energy of the organization, the esprit, the core is very important. Otherwise, this competence doesn't have any meaning. In organizations today, they are promoting competency, but competency is getting promoted, sometimes ignoring the behavioral issues. Behavior and competence both have to go hand in hand. I personally feel as a trainer, in my own experience, behavior has to take a front seat. 51% behavior, 49% competence. Because of the behavior part of it is not taken care of, we are in for trouble. And the higher you go in the organization, people are looking up to you and they are too frightened to talk to you anything. And you can use your power and bully people in the name of competence. So if you are not generous, if you don't have that charisma of connecting genuinely, being a man of integrity, at the same time being competent, then people will just listen to you because of your sheer position of power, and they will just do your bidding. And then what will happen is you will not be able to groom people for the future. A few major companies today are actually facing this crisis, if you notice. Very competent people, excellent they were, and when they have moved out, they are not able to get the second line because of some behavioral issues perhaps. I am of the opinion with whatever reading I do and whatever I'm scanning the industry, that in many cases succession plan meaning people from the bottom have to be promoted to the top levels of the ladder of the organization. These people who have to be taking higher responsibility and strategic positions in the organization, which is what is succession plan all about, succession plan fails in many organizations because they are not able to identify behavior-based competence people. That's very important. Okay. And so, taking it further, friends, delegation of authority contributes to the creation of an organization. No single, now we are talking about delegation of authority, okay? Delegation of authority, the word we have heard very often. As far as delegation is concerned, there are a number of points which we have, which are there in books. I would like you to highlight only two points, two major points. The purpose of delegation, the purpose of delegation is to divide the work, point number one. Point number two, the purpose of delegation is to create future managers. I delegate work to the next in line because I want to divide my work. I want to ease my pressure. So when I divide my work, I'm giving him a scope to grow so that he takes my place. When he takes my place, then I take the place of the person to whom I am reporting. These are the two major focus of any delegation. There are other things that are added which are supplementary, but these two have to be taken into account no matter what happens, right? So no single person is in a position to discharge all the duties in an organization. We don't work like islands or commandos. We work in a team, right? In order to finish the work on time, there is a need to delegate authority and follow the principles of division of labor. Okay? Delegation permits a person to extend his influence beyond the limits of his own personal time, energy, and knowledge. Delegation is possible when I'm given a certain position. So I'm there at the top and I've got a few people reporting to me. Those few people reporting to me are not just given to me without any purpose and without any focus. They are given to me because of certain imperatives of my own job that I'm holding. And I need to properly utilize these manpower resources who are reporting to me so that I am able to divide my work, so that I can handle higher functions. At the same time, I am able to groom future managers, right? It is impossible for any person to execute all the work in an organization to achieve the objectives of the organization. Similarly, in a growing concern, a single person cannot be vested with his entire decision-making authority. So the superior assigns duties and responsibilities to his subordinates and also delegates necessary authority to them. Okay, I'll take it further. Delegation is a process which enables a person to assign a work to others and delegate them with adequate authority to do it. The key word is authority. If I'm delegating some work to you, I also need to give you the authority, the power to take decisions and enforce it and implement it. If I delegate work to you and I'm always after your blood all the time, which happens in many organizations, that's hardly delegation. Talking of delegation again, there are managers who delegate dirty work to the subordinates below. Work which I don't like to do, which is crucial, which I have to oversee. I don't like to do it, so I just give it away to the juniors. And in the bargain, the junior becomes my extended assistant rather than a future manager. There are many subordinates who are languishing because they have not earned any skills, because they have only been doing some work which is support work rather than managerial work. And many managers are guilty of not transferring important work to them and giving them dirty work to do. When I say dirty work, inverted commas, I don't mean dirty as in dirty. I mean that work which the manager feels is not mine, work which the manager feels is low level, he gives it away. He has to be told by some structural form of, you know, in the organization, there should be some means by which he's told that you have to give him certain part of your work, not the work which you don't like to do. There are two sides of the same story, which we'll be discussing a little later, right? So, as per Louise Allen, delegation is a dynamic process of management. Dynamic means it's an ongoing thing, which a manager follows to divide the work assigned to him so that he performs that part of the work which only he can perform effectively because of his unique organization placement, and that he can get others to help him with whatever remains. Long definition. In a nutshell, I delegate work to that person who is competent to deliver. While it is good to know that there are four subordinates reporting to me, delegation is not democratic. When I say democratic means, if I have 100 units of work to to be delegated, I don't give 25, 25, 25, 25 to all the each of them. I would have to delegate the work in such a way that the work is getting done by the right person. So one thing which I want all of you to remember, delegation is not democratic. Particularly, I'm talking to people who are reporting, whose reporting manager seems to give them excess work. Okay, I come across a lot of executives coming and telling me that I am overloaded, and my peer, the people who are at the same level reporting to the same manager, they are not getting overloaded. I mean, they are going scot-free, or they are very light in their load. This is a common complaint. Let me dwell a little on this. The paradox of work, good work, the paradox of good work is that more work comes to you. Take it or leave it, that's the truth. You do a good work, you impress the organization, you also grow. So they feel, ha, this is a competent guy, let's give him more work. So the more work comes to you. And if you find there are 4 people reporting to you, out of the 100 units coming to me, I may give 60 units or 80 units to one person. This is natural. Whether it should take place or not take place is not the point. The point is that this is very natural, that I want to get my things done, correct? And to get my things done, I will give it to that person who gets it done. As simple as that. If one person is resisting the work, I'll not give it to him. If one person is having an attitude of not taking up work, I'll not give him. If one person is saying that, look, I'll only work to rule, then I may not give him. But there's one guy, maybe you, who's listening to me, who says, yes, I'm willing to take it. So I give you all the work. Now then the question comes, the classical question which everybody asks. But sir, I am taking so much of work, I don't get promoted, I don't get paid more. What is my answer to that? My answer is very simple. Know your parameters and work within that. Are you working for money? Are you working for something more than money? And I can only tell you one thing, that whatever competence we gather in a life, they get rewarded eventually. Now, this is not philosophical talk. This is not philosophy. This is not any abstract reassurance. If you keep it with your competence, you work very well. Some of you listening to me must have already got this success in your life. If you keep doing a good job, maybe at the junior level you may not understand. But as you go higher, you realize that you are headhunted. People know you in your industry, that you are a competent person. And when you reach that status, you could actually call the shots. You need to recognize that this is what I am. I am competent and I am sought after. At that time, you don't do brashness. You just realize that this is my worth and you get it. So my point is, the point that I am trying to put across is very simple. When delegation is happening to you and you are getting more and more work, you are learning a lot. When you learn a lot, I want each of us to realize that learning becomes the focus of this particular of work. Learning and gathering more and more skills. Regarding compensations, performance appraisal, regarding other things, I'll park it for the time being because that needs a lot of discussion. But suffice it to say that when you are getting work coming to you because of your competence, recognize it first. This competence makes you grow. You need to have an informal relationship with your senior to understand that the delegation is really truly coming to you, and then that informal relationship will build up a lot of confidence to take you to higher levels of organization. Now, in this direction, very few people are thinking. Since few people think in this direction, we have few leaders and few managers. As simple as that. When the focus becomes primarily money-driven promotion, money-driven delegation, then there's a problem. At a junior level, youngsters will talk about money because they want to set up their homes, get married, etc. Fine. But I've seen this happening at a senior level where the person is actually an agent. He's like he's one of the brand ambassadors for the company. Imagine you're holding a senior position, 15 years experience in the company. You are known by your company. They say XYZ, oh, he's from so-and-so company. Your name is there in the LinkedIn. Everybody recognizes you as a part of the identity of the company. Now, if you are going to be talking like this, which is what I hear from many senior people like this, it's quite shocking. Okay, I'm taking this example because I just want to throw open a thinking process about how delegation has to be understood by us. Okay, so the point to be noted, I know many of you will have questions, you may have your own disputes on this, you may have your own takes and calls on this, but do tell us about it, drop in mails and we are willing to give you answers for that, right? Right? So, taking it further, we have delegation is considered as one of the most important methods of training subordinates and building morale. Building confidence, motivation of a higher level. The delegation of authority helps the managers to concentrate on the important work of planning, organizing and controlling. When I delegate, I'm actually finding time to do the various processes of principles of management. I could plan with a lot of clarity because part of my work is given away. I could organize my day, I could organize my resources, I could do other things, directing, controlling, etc. pretty well. I would be able to know my boys very well. I could give different strokes for different folks. Each of my subordinates needs different type of handling, deftly, differently. So those things are possible when I delegate. Delegation enables the person not only to discharge his responsibility but also to discharge it effectively and economically. To a business unit which has different branches situated at different places, there is no alternative except delegation. Here he is talking about the geographical dispersion. A company having branches in different parts of the country, there's a senior most person sitting in one city and he has to delegate to his subordinates in other cities. That's very obvious. Okay. Aside from elements of delegation, which is all about the what does delegation comprise? What does it entail? Assignment of duties and responsibilities, very clear, I'm not running through it. Delegation of authority, if the work is assigned to any subordinate, there will be a need for authority to accomplish it. Now, this is something I'd like to talk about. In many cases, we come across people who are given delegation. They are given the delegation, but they're not given authority to take decisions. That's not delegation. That's what I said, passing on dirty work. This is happening because of certain reasons which I'll be talking about a little later. And when I do not give you authority, then you feel helpless. You feel frustrated. You're only doing some repetitive work which is low value addition. When I give you authority and I do not give you responsibility, that is more dangerous. Because what happens is you'll be like a bull in a china shop rampaging around, using your authority and not being accountable to what you do. Dangerous. In some FMCG organizations and some insurance companies, I've seen this happen. And that's very dangerous. In service sector, for example, certain people are given authority, but they are not responsible for what they do. And they really muck up with the customers. Now, these are some findings which I observe in the course of my duty in my work. Okay. So, ensure that the delegation of authority is having the powers to be given to the subordinates to do what he is supposed to do. If he is not given the power, there is a problem. Right? Accountability is very important. I lay a lot of emphasis on accountability. Accountability means the subordinate is answerable to his immediate senior. Whatever happens at the end of the day, I am accountable. If this sense of accountability is there in every citizen, then I would say the country would be a lovely place. You know, when I'm caught, inverted commas, not doing something, do I have the guts and the openness and the courage to say that, yes, I'm sorry, I did it? Saying sorry repeatedly and not keep doing it is not the point. The point is at the end of the day, when I admit that I'm accountable, I am rising to the level of responsibility. When I'm accountable, I'm responsible. When I'm responsible, I would always be given the authority. Remember this. Authority should be given to people who hold themselves accountable and responsible time and again. But today we are seeing a reverse case. People are craving and demanding authority, which they are given unfortunately. They don't show any signs of responsibility, neither accountability. They pass on the buck. Now that's not delegation, sorry. That's not delegation. It's simply cheap thrill of holding a power in a company, taking home fat salaries and doing nothing which is demanded from the KRA or the position of your power. People don't do it. Even if they're doing it, it doesn't reach the customers like us. It doesn't reach the subordinates who are working in the same company, there is no sense of fairness in things when authority alone is given and these people do not display responsibility and accountability. In certain cases, the assignment may be made to the subordinates, and if the work is not accomplished as per the instructions issued by the superior is answerable to the management but not to the subordinate. At the end of the day, if I am delegating work to my boys below me, whether they are accountable or not, whether they do it responsibly or not, whether they use the authority or not, I am finally responsible, I am finally accountable, I am finally having the authority. So I have to take the blame if things go wrong. The buck stops with me. Managers who practice this, they do two things. One is they show signs of leadership. Second, they are more assertive in ensuring that this does not repeat at the lower level. These are the two things that happen when you do this. Seniors have to learn to be first accountable, responsible. And once they do that with their seniors, then they are able to pass it on in a much more better way. Moreover, they inspire the juniors as good leaders. I have seen this in many organizations. Taking further, principles of delegation. Delegation to go by results expected. This is what I mentioned some time back. If I know that you're giving results, I'll delegate to you. But if you do not give results, I hesitate to delegate to you. That's one of the reasons why certain people are not given jobs. Certain people are not given true delegation. And they don't grow. And then they come back and say during the appraisal that I have put in 5 years of experience, but the level of work which they've done has been so low. They have not assumed responsibility. They have not been accountable. They have not used their authority. And they demand that they need to be promoted. When they do not get promotion, they do not realize that they did not accept delegation, or delegation was not given to them and they did not use that particular communication. In the bargain, who's the loser? Those people who did not take up risk delegation. Compare that with another person who took a delegation. He was pressurized, he did a lot of work, and then you know he felt that he is not being rewarded, maybe not in this company, but somewhere else he goes and he gets his he gets rewarded with a senior position. When you take a promotion, after taking up accountability, responsibility and using your authority properly, that promotion is a true promotion. It's worth it because you've got the skills to handle the job. If you do not have the skills to handle a senior position, it's useless being in that position. Okay? The superior should be clear, should clearly know what he expects from the subordinates before the delegation of authority. Another important thing. When I delegate work to my boys, I must know exactly what I expect from them. Setting the expectations, as you call it. I must set the expectations. Clear-cut, measurable terms. And then he has to be given the scope to set his expectations with me. Sir, these are the things I would like to get a support from you for. We must come to an agreement. An agreement in which we say, don't worry, I'm there. And these are the things I'll support you with. He says, sir, don't worry, I'm there with you. This cannot happen unless we have an informal relationship with the senior and the junior. Right? So that's why delegation is, it has a lot of informal element in it. If the informal element is not encouraged by either side or both the sides, the senior and the junior, then the delegation goes in a different direction altogether. Lots of assumptions come into picture. There are people who are introverted bosses. Bosses who talk only when it is required. They do not entertain any other type of, you know, sitting across over a cup of tea, talking informally during the lunch or during the tea break. They may not do it because of the personality of that person. Now, when he says something, somebody will interpret it a different way because he doesn't go and clarify. And then when the assumptions are there, they become plenty. Too many assumptions take place. And with too many assumptions, people would work in two different directions. They'll work at cross purposes. The backbone of this is what? It's communication. Learn to feel unthreatened to delegate. When you feel unthreatened to delegate, what will happen is you grow in strength. Many managers feel themselves vulnerable. They feel that if I delegate, what will happen? Now, this is an important thing. So, one has to get focus about what needs to be done. Spell it out. Set the expectations, set the agreement, monitor it, You may make some errors here and there, but then keep on correcting it. And when you do this over a period of time, you'll find that there's a proper amount of congruence and the parallax error is removed. Then the tuning takes place, as some people say, right? So, non-delegation of responsibility. A superior can delegate authority but not responsibility. Now, this again, I'd like to have a different view. At all levels, we have power, authority, responsibility, and accountability. What is essentially is being told here is that while I give my junior the responsibility and the authority to wield the responsibility, the final responsibility comes to me. That's very obvious, right? I delegate work to him, and within the work structure, there is an authority, power, responsibility, and accountability. That he has to take care of it. But the final outcome, that responsibility still lies with me. That is what is meant here, right? Assigning duties does not mean delegation of responsibility. The superior should be in touch with the subordinates to know whether duties are performed and the authority is exercised properly. The ultimate responsibility for the performance of the duties still remains with the superior.